Hello, friends, and thank you for joining us in what we're calling a conspiracy of goodness, singing the songs and telling the stories of people from across the globe and in our own local communities, Larry Long. Recording the songs and stories, the sounds of our communities, our friends, our citizens, Brett Hughes. I'm Tom Thibodeau, and today we are celebrating Stories of America.
Papa never had too much money, all went to pay the bill. Soon as he make just a little bit of money, well, one of us would get ill. Now old walls are bound to crumble, no matter how well that they're laid. And as soon as our old man began to stumble, nothing we could do or say. Cause you gotta have money to make money, that's how the story goes. And if you ain't got money, 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 boys, you gotta hit the road. Out the chimney, all around the chimney sweep. Now Ma would stay up late night worried while we was asleep. And didn't understand until now why she was on edge. Now I gotta have a couple shots of whiskey, why, before I get to bed. Cause you gotta have money to make money, that's how the story goes. And if you ain't got money, 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 boys, you gotta hit the road.
Let's go.
Knocking, come to get my rent. And I know what he's gonna say to me when all my money's spent. Now all that I got left to lean on, you can surely bet, is four new tires on my pickup truck and a wallet filled with debt. Cause you gotta have money to make money, that's how the story goes. And if you ain't got money, 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 boys, you gotta hit the road. Oh, you gotta have money to make money, that's how the story goes. If you ain't got money, 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 boys, you gotta hit the road. Let's go!
About 15 years ago, I had the privilege of speaking to the Wisconsin Association of Plumbing Inspectors here in La Crosse. Always considered a privilege to talk to the people who helped to build America. You think about it for just a moment, who is more responsible for stopping the spread of disease, doctors or plumbers? Well, certainly it's plumbers. And as I was talking to the head of the plumbing inspectors, I said, my Uncle Dale was a plumbing inspector in Milwaukee. And he looked at me and he said, are you Dale Thompson's nephew? I said, yes. He says, wait right here. And he runs off and he brings over five other men and he says, here's Dale's nephew. And he looked at me and we said, we all worked with your Uncle Dale as plumbing inspectors in Milwaukee. And we were all devastated when he died. In fact, this is the first time that all five of us have been together since Dale's death. And then he went on to explain that twice a week in Milwaukee, before they would go out and do their assignments in the city, checking the city's plumbing and residential and commercial areas, they would have breakfast with each other at George Webb. And they went on to talk about how my uncle was the heart and soul of the group. My Uncle Dale was a big man. When he was 11, his father died, and he became the father of the other children, a surrogate father to my mother and to younger brothers and sisters. At 16 years of age, he was at Milwaukee Technical High School, and he built a bedroom set that he used for a lifetime. After graduation, he joined the Army, and after our service to our country, he came back and became an apprentice, a plumber. Married my Aunt Shirley, and they had four children. We moved away from Milwaukee, but would come back 1 week every summer. And I got a chance to spend time with my Uncle Dale and my Aunt Shirley. My Uncle Dale would come home from work, tired, dog dead tired, and he'd reach in the refrigerator and he'd get himself a cold beer, and then he'd come out and we'd start to play catch. And then later in the evening after dinner, when he'd be lying on the floor, we'd jump on him and he would wrestle with us and then give us whisker rubs. This big, strong man, just like an old bear, but it's so protective and loving. On his refrigerator, there were all kinds of notes with small magnets that held them in place. It says a washer is needed here, a faucet is needed here, a shower is dripping here. See, my uncle, as a plumbing inspector, would go into places that oftentimes needed a plumber, but the people who were renting could not afford a plumber. And so at least two or three nights a week, my Uncle Dale would take three or four of those magnets off of his refrigerator. On the back would be the addresses, and he'd go back and he'd fix people's faucets and showers and drains gratis, because that's what a public servant does. That's what a good man does. My Uncle Dale, at age 44, was going to play softball in a church league, and he had a massive heart attack. His car went off the road and hit a tree. His son, my cousin, watched it happen. It was devastating, 44 years of age. And at his funeral, people stood in line for 3 hours to pay tribute and say thank you to a man who always had time for a faucet, a drain, a leaky shower, and a whisker rub. America is built and sustained by the Dale Thompsons of the world.
Tom, you know, I have found, I know you have found as well, that it's often the people that seem to have the least are the ones who often give the most. I wrote that song, Gotta Have Money to Make Money, when I was bumming around the country through the western region of the United States of America with my old partner, Fiddlin' Pete Watercott. We'd be playing money on street corners or in bars passing the hat. It was often folks like your Uncle Dale that took us in, and in exchange we would write them a song of appreciation out of gratitude. It's Pete's fiddle and that song, Gotta Have Money to Make Money, that can be heard on my first long play vinyl release called Living in a Rich Man's World. Another song featured on that recording is Back to Montana, which I wrote for a Korean War veteran and tungsten miner by the name of Al Olson, who Fiddlin' Pete and I met outside of the small town of Bishop, California, at a bar called the Hard Rock Inn. It was on a Friday night that Fiddlin' Pete and I stumbled into the Hard Rock Inn with the mural above the door that read, Only Miners Allowed. We put our instruments down by the bar and ordered a beer from the owner bartender, who everyone called Hard Rock Joe. Joe was a short and stout cigar-smoking, mobster-looking refugee from Chicago who kept a loaded pistol behind the bar at all times in case of trouble. Only saw Joe take it out once, and thank God he didn't pull the trigger. Pete and I looked like a couple of hayseeds in that tavern filled with strong, muscular, scar-faced, hard rock tungsten miners and their wives. It didn't take long for one of them to take note of our instruments and ask, Are you boys going to play those things or what? No sooner than we did, the entire room erupted in a joyous frenzy around one of Fiddlin' Pete's fiddle tunes. Folks began dancing around and on top of pool tables, laughing and singing with vigor and camaraderie. When we turned around after that first song, on the bar was lined dozens of open beer bottles waiting to be drunk. Not only that, but when they passed that cowboy hat around the room, it came back filled to the brim with dollar bills spilling over into our laps. The miners begged us to come back the next night, which we did for months upon months after that. From that first night on, Al Olson and his wife Jolene took us up to their home along the eastern slopes of the High Sierra Nevada mountain range in the Union Carbine town called Rivanna, that all the locals jokingly called Nirvana. A year later, Al and Jolene invited Pete and I to join them on a family vacation to visit their folks in York, Montana, near Helena, where they both are from. On that trip, we stopped into most every bar from Ravenna, California to York, Montana. Al knew every bartender and bar owner en route. We played music at most every stop, and when we did, Al passed the hat. Al Olson stood around 5'10", hunched over from all those back injuries related to the war, hard rock mining, and riding Bronx and Bulls in the rodeo when he was young. But when Al passed the hat, he would rear back, gain about 6 inches more, and walk straight up to each and every person in that bar, look them straight in the eye, and say, "Wouldn't you like to throw some money in the hat for my boys?" By the time we arrived in Montana, we had more money than we knew what to do with, plus filled with enough nourishment for a lifetime of song. It was Al and Jolene's dream to move back to Montana after Al retired, and their dream did come true. And that's what this song is all about. Back to Montana.
I'm tired of work. Back it's hurt. Body's all bent out of shape. I'm tired of thinking. My head it's naked. Wish my mind would go on blank. And if I could fly away, I'd blow all my troubles away and go back to Montana for old lake, to fishing in that Rocky Mountain stream. Gonna live out the life that I dreamed. I left Montana and I came to California in the year of 1963. 9 years of digging, I can't call it living, just to feed my family. And if I could fly away, I'd blow all my troubles away and go back to Montana. Go fishing in that Rocky Mountain stream. Gonna live out the life that I dream. Now I ain't complaining, no, I'm just explaining what's going on inside of me. The price is so high, my paycheck runs dry before I can pay my old fee. And if I could fly away, I'd blow all my troubles away and go back to Montana, throw land, go fishing in that Rocky Mountain stream. Gonna live out the life that I dream. My kids have all grown, gonna take time to roam. Just me and my wife, Jolene. Gonna pack up our goods, gonna head to the woods, go fishing in that Rocky Mountain stream. And then we're gonna fly away, we're gonna throw all our troubles away and go back to Montana, throw a hand, go fishing in that Rocky Mountain stream. Gonna live out the life that I dream.
A country is not remembered for the wars they have won, nor for the conquests that they have overcome, as much as the stories that they tell. And the stories of America, of our ordinary people doing extraordinary things, like Al and Jolene and my Uncle Dale. Well, here's one more. Ma Lenzer. I came to La Crosse in 1976 and had an opportunity to work at a residential treatment center, a place where kids who had hard traveling had now come to live, either after being out of group homes or foster homes, and sometimes the juvenile justice system. Kids with hard traveling, and oftentimes that hard traveling kind of broke their hearts and they got expressed in all kinds of different ways. And here was a woman who worked with those girls early in the morning, Ma Lenzer. Ma got up at 4:30 in the morning, she milked 32 cows, and then she'd come to work. She was an extraordinary woman, had 6 children of her own and a husband that was irascible, but she loved him anyway. And she'd come to work in the morning, and here are 14 girls getting out of bed, oftentimes not in very good moods. And she made them all what they wanted for breakfast. One wanted pancakes, one wanted French toast, one wanted scrambled eggs, one wanted just cereal. And there was Ma telling each of the girls, okay, now get yourself dressed, get yourself ready for school. Have you washed your hair? Have you brushed your teeth? Do you have your books? She was a model to them all. At Christmas time, Ma Lenzer had a sewing machine in the back room, and you could hear the stitches being thrown across that machine as she was making something individually for each of the girls. And one year was quilted jackets, and one year it was long flannel nightgowns. Young girls who had never known a mother's love knew it through Ma. Many of those young girls who might be listening now would be in their 40s and their 50s, and they'll never forget this kind farm woman who loved them so dearly. And I said, Ma, the rest of us have all kinds of trouble with the girls, but you don't. She said, oh, Tom, she said. You hug them with one arm and they realize you could spank them with the other. But it's all about love. Yes, it is, Ma. Yes, it is. Ma Lenzer loved so many young women, gave them a second chance, and hope that maybe one day they too might become a Ma.
You know, Tom, in a couple of weeks I'll be flying out to New York City because our youngest daughter, Lyra Rose, and her beloved husband, Fernando Fiorentino, are going to gift us with a granddaughter, our fourth grandchild. Last month, I was so blessed to revisit my good friend Fiddlin' Pete Watercott once again, and we played together at the Curly Fletcher Cowboy Poetry Rendezvous at the Laws Museum in the Owens Valley of California. It's always a gift to be with old friends, which means it's always a gift to be with my good friend Tom Thibodeau, servant leader, professor of Viterbo University, and also Brett Hoos. And we thank you all for listening to Conspiracy of Goodness. May you all have a wonderful week, and thank you for all that you do.
Keep telling stories, celebrating America, peace and all good until we meet again.
Bring those hands together.
You have been listening to Conspiracy of Goodness with Larry Long and Tom Thibodeau, produced and recorded by Brett Hoos. For more information about Larry and Tom, please visit www.larrylong.org and www.tomttalks.com. We look forward to being with you next week. Thank you for listening.